Our scripture reading schedule, as you find it in the first reading in your bulletin, takes us through the close of the book of Deuteronomy, the last book of the Pentateuch, the last book of Moses, and here in these closing chapters, we have the final acts of Moses in God's charge as leader of the people. And we also have the transition from the leadership of Moses to Joshua. Chapter 31 in our schedule for this week begins with Moses preparing the people and Joshua for that transition of leadership. Moses gives special instructions to the priests and the civil elders for the public reading of the record of the law that he has given there in the plains of Moab and that he has written down for them. This public reading of this record of the law for the people is to take place every seventh annual feast of the tabernacles. Everyone from infants on up, and even foreigners, everyone was to hear, understand, and learn the covenant revelation of God. This was intended to pass on remembrance of that holy summary of God's law, that restating and expansion, application of God's law for their time in the promised land. The chapter ends with two important things to note. First, God calls Moses and Joshua to the tent of meeting for Joshua's inauguration as leader of Israel. But while they are there, the second thing of note is that God predicts the eventual breaking of the covenant and the unfaithfulness of the people. God explains the judgment that will come, and he appoints a song that the people must learn. Moses is to receive that song as inspired worship song that is to be put into the mouths of the people to provide a testimony against their unfaithfulness. It holds out in that testimony the hope of sovereign grace and divine restoration. Now, what a display of grace and patience the Lord provides here. Though the people will rebel, the Lord still provides for their spiritual good. He doesn't simply leave them to their own destruction. He provides the path for instruction and devotion, even though they will neglect it. Remember, they have just received the instruction to hear the reading of the law in its summary form. As Moses writes down his lectures there from Deuteronomy, that is to be read by the priests to the people every seventh year. God's making provision for their remembrance. And then he draws Moses and Joshua aside and says, they won't. They won't heed what I'm giving. And yet he doesn't withdraw it. What a marvelous display of God's persistence in his covenant. He provides all the means, even though he declares by way of prophecy, they will in fact neglect that revelation. And then God provides the means of instruction in judgment for when that time comes, when they'll rebel, when they'll come under judgment, when they'll be scattered. They'll have the words of that song in their mouths that will testify against them and promise them the means of restoration. They will have a clear correction in that song and a means of hope. What a marvelous display of God's grace and patience. Chapter 32 gives the words of the song, which Moses delivers to the people with strong exhortations to them to hear, be warned, and walk in diligent obedience. So, even though Moses knows the purpose of this song will be corrected, it will be a testimony against them. It's in their mouths so that they know what's coming should they neglect all God's mercies. What does he do with it? What does Moses do with it? Well, like a good shepherd, he says, be warned by these words. Walk faithfully because of these words. Again, this manifest testimony of diligence in the covenant. There's never warrant for neglecting duties. And even with a sure prophecy of the neglect in the people, Moses doesn't neglect his duties. He shepherds them in diligent obedience. The chapter concludes with the Lord directing Moses to Mount Nebo, where he will see the promised land and then pass away. chapter 33 records Moses' final prophetic blessing on the tribes as he prepares to depart this life. And chapter 34 records Moses' death, the mourning of Israel for his passing, along with a brief eulogy for Moses. Now, in our reading schedule, we then turn to the book of Joshua. And as we turn there, the Lord does not reveal precisely who the human author is, but it is likely that eyewitness records, including some from Joshua himself, were gathered into this final inspired historical account of the conquest and division of the Promised Land. The book is named for Joshua as its main character and God's appointed leader of the people. And in the Jewish divisions of the books of the Bible, Joshua is the beginning book of the section called the Former Prophets. That included Joshua, Judges, 1 and 2 Samuel, and 1 and 2 Kings. The book divides easily into two sections, chapters 1 through 12, recording the crossing of the Jordan and the conquest of the land, and chapters 13 through 24, recording the dividing and settling of the land. And we have before us this week the first four chapters of Joshua. Chapter 1 has the charge to Joshua as he takes up the leadership of the people. It's worth noting the repeated charge given to him, be strong and courageous. These words that Moses said to Joshua earlier are repeated by the Lord and then by the Lord's people to Joshua, encouraging him in his calling now to lead the people in conquest and the settling of the Promised Land. Now, the chapter concludes with the order going out to prepare for crossing the Jordan. Chapter 2 records the sending out of two spies in preparation for that crossing of the Jordan. These spies are especially concerned with the first fortified city that they'll face, and that is the city of Jericho on the other side of the Jordan. Here we have the account of Rahab as she hides those spies and helps them escape capture, and arrangements are made there to preserve her life and the life of her extended family when the conquest begins. Chapters 3 and 4 record that crossing of the Jordan with signs and ceremonies indicating the power of the Lord, his presence, and his provision for the people. I wish to read in your hearing chapter 4 of the book of Joshua. And here in chapter 4, the Lord commands the setting up of memorial stones. This is the first of several occasions throughout the book of Joshua where there are memorials set up. And the language is a bit confusing as to how many memorials we have here being appointed by the Lord's command. It sounds like there are memorial stones set up in the Jordan River and memorial stones set up in the place where they camp at Gilgal. Some commentators suggest that the complexities of the original language are really to be understood as saying that the stones are taken up from where the priests stood with the ark in the middle of the Jordan River when it dried up for them to cross. That the 12 representatives who were appointed to gather up stones took them from the very place where the ark was standing with the priests holding it, mounted on the pole. And then those that were those stones that were in the midst of the Jordan are set up at Gilgal. So one way or the other, the point is that the Lord appoints a memorial for the people with regard to the crossing of the Jordan. This crossing was miraculous in a way intended to remind the people of the Red Sea crossing. It's made explicit that they would draw the connection of God's covenant-keeping faithfulness, that he is the same God as the one that their forefathers knew as the one that brought them across the Red Sea. This God is their God, Jehovah, and takes them into the Promised Land. He is in the beginning and the ending, and he is across the whole of the covenant. He is their God. They're being drawn in to remember the fullness of his miraculous provisions. Now, note the importance of the Lord's appointed commemorations. These are not invented by the people. They didn't say, you know, this was a pretty neat experience. We should do something to remember it. That's not what happened. The Lord commanded a memorial. The means of piety are not manufactured by God's people. God appoints his means of piety. And here, he appoints the commemoration. He appoints what is to be remembered and how, and what piety is to be involved in it. So these are not invented by the people, but rather appointed by the Lord to perpetuate the knowledge of his power, provision, and presence to future generations, as well as this one. There was to be a multi-generational communication through this memorial of the marvelous provisions of the Lord in his appointed memorial. This is particularly true of all the memorials appointed by God. They are intended to pour out meaning with regard to God's grace and covenant keeping, and they are to be multi-generational. God frames his covenant in terms of multiple generations. The parents are to take what was given to the grandparents and received by them and handed off to the children. And that is particularly to be done as memorials are appointed by God for that purpose. That happens in all of the ceremonial services of the Old Testament, but also as we see these unique and special memorials in the book of Joshua. They're filled up with content that is to be meaningful to the people who are invested in setting up those memorials in obedience to God. They are full of pious meaning from previous generations, as God appointed it here, and God makes it very explicit. There is to be a conscientious passing on. This should stimulate the conversation. The children and the grandchildren should say, "What's this all about?" And those who have received it are to pass it on. This is about our covenant-keeping God. This is to remind us of his salvation. We have memorials in the new covenant appointed by God in this very same vein. We have baptism and the Lord's Supper. As we witness them, it should fill us up with the piety that they represent, the covenant of grace displayed. And we should be applying that in our own hearts and lives, and it should stir up the conversation for the next generation. That sign of baptism you just saw, that marks us out. That means these things about the gospel. It represents the whole of the work of Christ in the gospel applied to his people. It was put on you. Jesus claims you for his gospel purposes. You must have faith. I must have faith. This sign was put on me. That kind of conversation needs to fill up the meaning of the memorials of the covenant. We have two critical occasions for that, right? Baptism and the Lord's Supper. And they should stir us up in this same way. They're full of the meaning of God's covenant of grace. They are the content of that covenant made visible, and they should fill us up with the pious meaning, which should strike up the conversations to pass on to future generations, even as we have received them from previous generations. And so, as we hear this record, the sacred history of the people of God in the Old Testament, as they are on the brink of conquest into the Promised Land, let us hear with new covenant ears with regard to the meaning of the memorials and the commands of God related to them. Much more that we could say, but let's stand together with these things in mind and hear chapter 4 of the book of Joshua. Joshua chapter 4, this is God's very word, holy, infallible, and inerrant in all its parts. Let us hear and heed. Joshua chapter 4. And it came to pass, when all the people had completely crossed over the Jordan, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, "Take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one man from every tribe, and command them, saying, 'Take for yourselves 12 stones from here, out of the midst of the Jordan, where the plate from the place where the priest's feet stood firm. You shall carry them over with you and leave them in the lodging place where you lodge tonight.' Then Joshua called the 12 men whom he had appointed from the children of Israel, one man from every tribe. And Joshua said to them, 'Cross over before the ark of the Lord, your God, into the midst of the Jordan, and each one of you take up a stone on his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign among you when your children ask in time to come, saying, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall answer them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord when it crossed over the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be for a memorial to the children of Israel forever. And the children of Israel did so, just as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones from the midst of the Jordan, as the Lord had spoken to Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, and carried them over with them to the place where they lodged, and laid them down there. Then Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests were, who bore the Ark of the Covenant stood, and they are there to this day. So the priests who bore the Ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished, that the Lord had commanded Joshua to speak to the people according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. And the people hurried and crossed over. Then it came to pass, when all the people had completely crossed over, that the Ark of the Lord and the priests crossed over in the presence of the people. And the men of Reuben, the men of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over armed before the children of Israel, as Moses had spoken to them. About 40,000 prepared for war crossed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho. On that day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they feared him as they had feared Moses all the days of his life. Then the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, command the priests who bear the Ark of the Testimony to come up from the Jordan. Joshua therefore commanded the priests, saying, come up from the Jordan. And it came to pass, when the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord had come from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet touched the dry land, that the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they camped in Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up in Gilgal. Then he spoke to the children of Israel, saying, when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what are these stones? Then you shall let your children know, saying, Israel crossed over this Jordan on dry land. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed over, that all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. Thus ends the reading of God's holy word. You may be seated.